Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the 10 Laws Podcast with East Forest. I am Seth East Forested. Thanks for joining us. This week, I have a conversation that I had with Matt Graham. Matt Graham, I think, was the very first episode ever on the 10 Laws Podcast, and I wanted to have him back. He's a friend of mine who lives out in southern Utah, and he's an outdoor primitive skills expert. He's been on TV. He's been on Discovery Channel, Nat Geo, leading hunter-gatherer trips for 20-plus years. He's also a runner. He's done some ultra running. And every time we get to hang out, it's very inspiring for me. And when we go out on hikes, you know, we do things like bow drill fires and spearfish and wander in minimal clothing. It's sort of this primal thing that's just, I mean, come on, it's amazing, right? So he's a good friend to have, and I really love his outlook on life and the world. And so for this hike, this podcast is different because we went on a hike actually up Boulder Mountain on the opposite side above Escalante, and we went way up to Powell Point, which is a little above 10,000 feet. And it was a good hike, good huff. And I just pulled out the recorder when we were sitting up there underneath some ancient trees. So it's not in the studio. The sound is not as good, and you'll hear some wind sounds and stuff. I apologize. You know, if you put on headphones or something, I'm sure your brain will eventually be able to drop into the conversation. But I just want to give you some context, and I just thought it would be fun. You know, with Matt in particular, just like we should be doing this outside, and especially in a place where we feel we're both connected to the sense of space that we're in. So I hope you'll enjoy that. I just want to let you know, we've been doing some stuff over there on the East Forest Council on Patreon, including live streams and group meditations and the monthly Zoom council and podcasts, extras and solo casts and things like that and unreleased music. Check it out. See if it's for you. Patreon.com/East Forest or at eastforest.org. Scroll down and it's on the homepage there on the bottom of the screen. There's lots of different tiers and ways to drop in. And it's just a cool way for me to feel more connected to all you guys and vice versa, I hope. And I really appreciate as a direct way for you to support this podcast as well as the East Forest Project in general. Speaking of, thank you so much for the reviews that you give and for subscribing to the podcast. It makes a big difference. The 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, of course, are wonderful, and they're very easy to do. You can do it while I'm talking. I also want to just thank our last written review that came in. I love that the handle is effing great. 10 out of 10. Would recommend 10 laws. You are full of puns. Thank you so much for that written review. And lastly, only other business is that we are sold out for the East Forest Fall Retreat in Southern Utah in this fall. But there's a wait list if you'd like to join up for that. That's also at eastforest.org/retreat. And the Salt Lake City event has some tickets available for May 1st for the East Forest Ceremony Concert. And we're also trying to see about doing some concerts in a few other markets. And you can check out and pledge your interest also via eastforest.org/tour. Okay, well, let's get into this conversation with my dear friend, Matt Graham. Trying to see the brightness in the world, but it's pitch black. Words from the Savior, love your neighbor is intact. Some out of translation getting lost in the syntax. So we are sitting at 10,175 feet.
Yeah. To be precise, yeah.
And on the top of Boulder Mountain, and this might win, well, it's hard to say. This might be close to best podcast location. I did a podcast once on a beach in Maui, but it was Duncan Trussell's show, so it wasn't mine. But I have to admit, it was pretty.
That sounds pretty epic, pretty too. Yeah.
But this is wins the cake for rarefied air.
Yeah, it's nice to get a different perspective on the land.
What can you see? Maybe you could describe what we're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's nice because you know, I hike a lot of the country below. And, you know, a lot of these canyons we're looking at, right now we're facing east, so we're seeing the whole Kapparowitt Range. We're basically looking down on top of the Kapparowitts, which is a totally different perspective from what we normally see. And then we're looking into the Grand Staircase National Monument. So we see the Escalante drainage. All the slick rock over there is where Pine Creek is, where you were not too long ago.
Yeah, we see all the way to the Henry Mountains.
Yeah, and then we see beyond Pine Creek is Death Hollow. You can see that, and you can actually see McGath Ridgeline is the last slick rock out there, and then Circle Cliffs, and then the Henry's way, way in the distance. So it's pretty cool. And then behind us, we were looking at Bryce Canyon. We saw the like entire national park from aerial.
Yeah, it looks small.
Yeah.
And we can see Arizona.
Yeah.
We can see Navajo Mountain into Arizona.
Yeah, you saw a couple monuments out there from Monument Valley. Yeah, pretty cool for sure.
So why do you go on these long runs and trips out into these places? I mean, I understand it. There's this obvious payoff, but it's also a lot of work. I mean, and there's a level of like discomfort, but I guess there's a lot else to it too as well. What is the actual thing inside you that's like, today I want to go out for 2 days, 3 days, or run out there?
Yeah, I think some of it, it's interesting because like when we came on the point, we saw the sign for Wesley Powell, who was kind of one of the early explorers of the area. I think there's some of that for me, you know, it's the exploratory nature, just wanting to see different places and discover different things. And it kind of it almost seems pointless to drive places when you can walk there to me.
no matter the time.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like walking there just gives you so much more. It actually teaches you how important the journey is and not just the destination.
That has been coming up for me a lot now that I'm not flying around.
Yeah.
And like when I do fly around in the future, thinking of it like a journey. Because it really is, but before it's like, oh, I'll go, I'll come back the next day. And
yeah.
Not that it has to be longer, it's just more that, I don't know, probably be doing less of it because each one would be more special and a bigger deal.
Yeah.
Like it'd have to be more important to go far.
Yeah, like, you're right, right.
So that's cavalier. Yeah. So of Boulder Mountain, where we are in the southern Utah desert, it is big thing and a big landmark in the area.
Mm-hmm.
When you've spent time out here, like, would you say that, you know, sometimes people sum up a psychedelic journey with a phrase or a word. Like, sometimes I'd say if I had to sum up every journey I've had, in a weird way, it comes down to, like, look, it's all good. And it's the cheesiest thing. But, I mean, it does sum up something about just behind it all, there's always something holding the thing that's holding the thing. And anyway, that's like, as an analogy, would you say that the land, all the years you've spent in it, just listening and being in it, does it have a message or a translation, whether through a feeling or a phrase for you?
I mean, this might sound cheesy too, but the thing that comes up for me is I always hear it's saying you're good enough to be here, you know. And I guess sometimes like I feel like I put a lot of pressure on myself, but the land just feels like it always welcomes me back from my own pressures. And I think so. I guess that might be the phrase: you're good enough to be here.
Think that feels like a human right, or does it feel like something that you're given or you earn?
No, I think it's a human right, you know, for people that listen to the land, want to be a part of it. But not everyone does, you know. So a lot of people prefer to be as removed from it as they can. Yeah. I guess there's many different layers to that, you know. Some people they prefer all the layers that filter them from the land, the big cushy house that's, you know, has all the amenities and, you know, they prefer to drive rather than walk, or fly rather than drive. And
discomfort, I know, is something that in our culture and generally we tend to try to avoid as humans.
Yeah.
And, but what is it about having that discomfort? What's the gift in that?
Yeah. But that's the thing is we, as humans, we're searching for that immediate comfort, but in the end game, we just created a very uncomfortable life, you know, health-wise, emotionally, spiritually, or the land, like, it always gives just the right amount of discomfort to keep our minds healthy, keep our bodies healthy, spirits healthy.
Well, maybe it has something to do with when you're up against certain stresses. It in a way, it's a reminder and or a distraction and or it creates some kind of pattern. Otherwise, we're living in a space, I suppose, where we're trying to have none, right? Which isn't how the world works. Certainly not the natural world, which we're a part of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, yeah, no, it doesn't work. Like, we can, you know, we could create a space that's always 78 degrees, but like, what is that going to benefit if you can't feel the breeze of the cool morning, you know, or the heat of a warm day, you know, that the highs and the lows and the colds and the hots and the discomforts and the comforts, you know, they're all part of it. You know, if you can't embrace one moment, you can't truly live happily and dwell in the comfort zone either.
Yeah, it's like the discomforts and the inconveniences here are in many ways the best part of it.
Yeah.
But, or it's why it exists in a lot of ways. It's what makes it what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, like this hike we took was interesting because, like, you know, we kind of went on a very obscure trail that doesn't get walked very much.
And probably not. But also, there's so many more, like, blockbuster trails. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And everyone's all about the canyons here.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because we're on this trail for a couple of miles. It's like not walked at all. But then we hit this, like, this sort of rougher four-wheel drive road that you can, you know, we walked on for a couple miles that people can drive basically pretty close to where we're sitting right now.
It's a long drive, you said, but you can do it.
But it's a super long drive. Like, it would take longer to drive than it took us to walk up that 2 mile trail to get there. But yeah, I guess it comes down to what you want. Some people would prefer just to spend all day in their car driving around here.
Yeah. So if the land is telling you that we deserve to be here, it feels like an invitation in a way back to what was, what is really. But a sloughing off of masks and stuff. Like, yeah, maybe there's something about the rhythms. You know, also when you're touched into temperature, you're more in tune with the seasons. And mm-hmm. I feel that big time here. I'm always like watching the weather and really, yeah, sometimes from week to week, you can feel it moving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the seasons are really pronounced. And I don't know if that's good for me or bad for me. It feels like it puts me into more... I'm more now on the wave. I'm surfing the wave of the rhythm of life on the planet with the seasons.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was thinking the other day about sort of about that, those comforts, discomforts, because we know a gentleman friend named McCall.
Yeah, McCall. He moved away, right?
Yeah, they moved to Switzerland. They bought land up in a beautiful valley, and they moved up there, and they lived in a wall tent for a couple years, and then they started building this really nice straw bale house. You know, for a lot of people, straw bale's like, oh, it's great. You know, it's this organic house, and you know, it's, for a lot of people, they'd be stoked to have such a well insulated, well built house, and you know, the house is probably worth, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars by the time they finished. And after it was all done, McCall told me in honesty, he said, you know, we were we were a lot happier when we lived in our wall tent because we were more connected to being outside.
Sort of like building your own prison.
Yeah. And sometimes a home can be like that, like a prison from the natural world.
Well, there's got to be a fine line or that sweet spot.
Yeah, for sure.
Comfort, but not too much comfort.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, no one wants to like suffer all the time, but I think there's a difference between just forcefully suffering all the time and finding the rhythms of nature. I mean, when we wake up in the morning, it's naturally cooler. It's supposed to be, you know, and the day progressively gets hot and then it gets cool again. And that's not suffering to feel those fluxes. But we've gotten to the point where it's almost taboo that we have to be indoors all the time.
Yeah. And when you're out here, like even now, like since we're so high up, we have cell service. And for a lot of us at our homes, we have some form of connection like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's easy. It's like a mental game of how plugged in you still are. You know what I mean? Clearly, when you get out, you're away, you're out. But there's this weird balance of when you're here, it is, has its own medicine of just being here. And like I'm talking about the seasons and the weather and all the stuff and
yeah.
The dust. But you could kind of be inside a lot and be plugged in. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or you could be outside and more plugged in.
That's true.
Yeah.
When people come down here, whether you're guiding them or you witness them, like, what do you think is the easiest thing people miss or the easiest way they miss things? Sort of opportunity lost. It's like it's right in front of your face if you guys would just take such and such mask off or stop doing this one thing.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, for me, they tend to, I mean, those filters seem to get removed right away when they come out to the land. And I start seeing more and more and, yeah, experiencing more and appreciating simpler things too. Simpler but more complex, you know, like when you look at, you know, a single leaf, you know, it's way more complex than the entire structure of your home, you know. So you start appreciating the detail and the complexity of nature because you're no longer as removed from it.
Yeah. Being out, what people do, they do, maybe the thing they miss is they just don't give the sense that they don't allow the time for the slowing down. Like if you're here and you don't even give it, like overnight, you know, people wake up and it's like a whole different vibe.
Hmm.
And you see in retreats, when we were doing retreats out here, by day four, it's like,
mm-hmm.
People are super dropped in.
Yeah.
Very different when they arrive.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. When I used to do month-long courses with the survival school that I worked for a while, oftentimes, like, my energy was so subdued with the land, or connected with the land, I should say, that, like, sometimes it was really hard for me to take the energy of the students when they'd show up. I was just like, well, I'm kind of overwhelmed. Like, you guys need to like drop in and like kind of get out of your own headspace. So I'd always appreciate that. Like after a few days,
you finally started to
talk. Yeah, everyone was like likable after a few days, mostly. I mean, there was a rotten egg every once in a while, but not usually. I mean, generally, like, even people where you first meet them, you're like, oh, man, I don't know if I could hang out with you. Yeah, after a few days.
And you're going to be 28 days.
Yeah, but that's the thing. After a few days when they're out there, their energy softens. They start seeing more. They start feeling more. They just become easier to be around.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems like, again, people, they're doing a 28-day course with primitive skills, I would assume, to get into a form of discomfort, to feel more comfort, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And do you find that the people who do those kind of courses are like, there's a common hunger, or like, is it in response in a way to life, or is it more just folks who are already like just trying to deepen their connection to what they have?
Yeah, it's there's kind of a pretty big gamut on why people come out there. I'd say that it's, the spectrum goes from people that already have quite a lot of experience outdoors, so like backpacking and doing things, and they want to take it to another level. Like they want to like remove some of those filters. They want a deeper connection. They want a deeper confidence with the land. And then I would say on the opposite end of that spectrum is the typical professional, you know, that's maybe has a really high end job. You know, I've literally had a couple rocket scientists on my trips, you know, and big CEOs of major companies, and they're not happy, you know, and a lot of times they're coming out there to try to figure out why they're not happy. And they wonder if it's because they've removed themselves so far from the natural process.
Do you think that's why, or does it seem to help them?
It definitely helps them. Yeah. I mean, the last CEO I had on a trip said, you know, the course completely changed his life and his whole perspective.
I would imagine it would.
And he felt like, I have kind of kept in touch with him. He honestly seems like a different person already. Like he even said, he's like, yeah, you know, I've made really successful, I've made tons of money and pursued it. But he's like, after spending a few days out in the canyons with you, I realized that the key to happiness for me is that I found the desire to want less, finally.
And like really, and it wasn't a chore. It was like, I'm appreciate. Like it's yeah. So good. It's like when you just, you know, you figure out the thing that makes you feel good, and
yeah,
it really now resonates that way.
Exactly. It's like, sometimes we hear like less is more, but for him, like the way he quoted it was like, I actually found the desire to want less. Like, and I never had that before.
That's a really cool way of putting it.
Yeah.
Found the desire to want less.
Yeah. You know, and I thought that was really, you know, cool perspective and amazing for him that, you know, he could come to that, you know, through that connection out there.
Yeah. I went through a bit of a minimalism thing, I don't know, a few years back. You know, there's some books about it. It's like a real ethos.
Uh-huh, sure.
Where you pack. You can like either pack everything you own up,
and then as you
need something,
uh-huh,
you get it. And if you need it more than twice or something, it stays out.
Okay. Yeah.
And then everything else, yeah, after 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And they're like, and if it's something you only need like once a month, that's worth, and it's less than, I don't know, whatever dollars, like that's something I'll buy,
mm-hmm,
or borrow.
Yeah.
And how low can you go, basically? And I didn't really take it super far, but when I went through divorce and moved out here and I had the fifth wheel, I really was just like, what's the minimum, you know, for having a kitchen and,
mm-hmm,
you know. And somebody walked in my place once and the first thing they said was like, oh, like minimalist living or something. I was so proud because like, how can you even see that? Because it's a trailer, right? You know, it's like, it's awesome you're noticing that, like, it's just kind of the basics.
Yeah.
But good basics.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But anyway, I think I was just getting on a tangent about minimalism. I discovered wanting less. And
no, no.
That. Elon Musk is doing that apparently now.
Is he?
He's selling all of his stuff.
Oh, good for him.
And homes and everything. He's like, I don't.
Yeah.
I think he discovered the same thing. He's like, it doesn't help me at all. It's like, I'm going to lighten the load.
He's actually the one that came on the course.
He's the guy. No, he said he made a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot of pretty high profile people who come out who are searching for themselves.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for some reason I tend to get a lot of big CEO corporation folks. But yeah, I it's funny, speaking of less, like I always because for a while I lived out of just what would fit in my back in a backpack, you know, and as I've gotten older and I've had more phases in my life and done different things, like I own you know, a lot more things. Not as much as most, but
you got a hot tub.
Yeah, I got a hot tub. I have land, you know, and I have a place to store things, and so it's yeah. I always thought if I could have one superpower, basically make all my stuff disappear. But like anytime I needed something, I just snap my fingers. So I'd be on top of a mountain and I'd be like, yurt. I want a yurt on this mountain right now.
Yeah, you have to be able to snap your fingers and it goes away when you're done. So it sort of like goes back into the Akashic storage.
Well, that is. That's the superpower. So like anything can appear or disappear at any moment.
It's a good superpower.
But I know there would be a ramification to it, but I'm not sure what it is yet because it seems like it'd be pretty awesome.
Yeah. So the things that you value the most now, is it just pretty basic?
Yeah. I mean,
what are your top three most valued possessions?
Besides like good friends, I would say a good knife. I have a knife in particular that I haven't parted with for like 20 years. Have a couple good blankets like that too. And, I like a good pot to cook with.
Those are your top three, a pot, a blanket, and a knife.
Yeah. those are pretty, if I have those, then yeah. I mean, I've had just that for many times before. Been pretty stoked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you're out foraging, what are the easiest things to get? When we were out, we were spearfishing. That seemed pretty easy.
Yeah.
Certain times, certain places.
Yeah, exactly. It all comes down to environment, really. You know, in southern Utah, southern Utah is pretty diverse. So we do have some areas that we can fish in, and there's good hunting for turkey and deer and small game and rabbits as well. When you get into the canyons, they're quite lush. So sometimes I'll use like up to 200 different plants for food out here.
200?
Yeah, I counted them one time. Over a few months, I used 200 plants for food.
Question. These trees we're sitting next to, are these bristlecone pines that are like as old as Jesus?
they are, yeah. They're,
that's what I thought. These are the really, really, really old ones way up here.
Yeah.
Wow.
These are...
Wow. They see some serious weather, too.
I know. They get in the wind, and they spin around, and they twist up. And
so how old can they be?
These are probably as old as when Jesus was walking around.
We're sitting in the shade of one of these beautiful sacred trees, and it's dropping pine cones where you're sitting.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's still alive, too. Beautiful tree.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that they could stand
vibrant green
up here on this cliff.
And they're on the edges.
Yeah.
That's the weird part is they're like, this cliff goes down like a couple thousand feet, like right down.
Yeah, they're pretty amazing trees that they just choose to be super exposed to the wind and the elements. Like it's almost like they thrive by being beaten by the wind and the cold.
That is nuts. Because the wind, you know, wind is such an abrasive energy. It feels like it sucks energy out of you.
Yeah. At least that's what we tell ourselves. But maybe it doesn't. You know, maybe these trees know. I mean, obviously they know something because they lived here a long time.
They really feel like they ground out the space, and just thinking about what they've seen. Mm-hmm. The amount of time. And this view we're looking at is like intensely expansive, and this has just sort of been the pinnacle of it for thousands of years. That's nuts.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that lives that long out here?
No, not out here. I mean, there's some really old sequoia trees that are a couple thousand years old, but
different part of the country.
Yeah, I mean, some of the bristlecones live almost up to 4,000 years old.
Wow.
In certain environments.
Wow. Well, I thank them for allowing us to provide some shade and some, you know, repose on the top of the mountain.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, I find that things like that are clearly humbling, but everything out here to me is humbling. That's what I think is really amazing about coming out, is it makes me not feel like top dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, yeah. We were talking on the way up about like how many times in your life you've almost been hit by lightning or
yeah.
You know, within 10 feet. And I'm like, talk about humbling. That's one of the reasons you pay attention to the weather and things. Like, things like that can happen fast.
Yeah, but you know, things like that, like, honestly, like, it's scary, but maybe it's an addiction for me, but I also feel alive, you know, and I'm not exposed to elements, and I get to see things like that. Like I was telling you, like, during that time, I got to watch two trees, like, light like a match. Two pretty good-sized trees, about 40 feet tall, just lit right up. And then I got to watch them go out. You know, I'm being exposed. You know, we're talking about mountain lions today, and I've seen quite a few, and I've had experiences with mountain lions where I've got to run with them, and I've got to come close to them, and, you know, and those things, like, just, they get you jazzed again, you know, on life.
Well, when you get closer to death, you do feel very alive.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said energetically about coming to terms with death, in a sense,
mm-hmm.
because you are then more alive.
Yeah, I think I look at it the opposite way, though. Like, I feel like those circumstances, like, I feel like I'm looking at life, and death to me feels like just closing myself off from nature.
Ah.
Like, I feel like that's close to death.
But it's all around you, too. Since it's a part of nature, like, that's kind of what it is, everything dying or being reborn out of that.
For sure, yeah. I mean, it dies, but it also, like, it lives fully. And I'd just rather live fully instead of being, having my soul. I guess it's more about my soul, more than my body. Like, I just feel like if I'm not connected, then my soul feels like it's close to death. And I don't want my soul to feel like it's death through my life. I want it to feel alive.
Yeah, so the word death is sort of like a closing.
Yeah.
Okay. This is an opening. Yeah, well, nonetheless, being around these trees that are that old and then all the other things around us that are much more, I mean, it's all the cycle. They're just in different timelines. And you know, we're part of that timeline too. It's just a smaller one.
Yeah.
They must look at us like hummingbirds. You know, we're like buzzing around. It's just a different speed. Yeah, places like this too are really important for those reminders and that humbling of just bringing us back to like what we are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think those CEOs and stuff, I'm guessing it's because you're so wrapped up in your own rhythms that, I don't know, it's closed off.
Yeah.
That's the death that you're talking about, in a way.
Yeah. Well, I think as humans, or just as a living being, I think we're designed to interact with everything on this planet. And, you know, that's people, that's nature, that's our society, you know, it's everything, you know, and I think when you're only focused on the aspects of trying to create the almighty dollar, and you're trying to buffer yourself, you don't even realize it, but you're buffering yourself from all these things that your soul wants to interact with. And I think that's where the problem comes in.
Yeah, it gets short-circuited too, because you're hardwired, like you're saying, to interact, but then it can happen through social media and the internet and stuff.
Yeah.
It turns on the same fire, but it's like, it's sugar-coated and it's very different. And
I mean, that's, I guess, yeah, that might seem like a complex interaction, but it's really a tiny one comparatively to all the interactions that could take place.
And it seems to be there's something to getting dirty and moving your heart and feeling the weather that has been with us for so long that our bodies are happy that way.
Yeah.
We're hardwired.
Yeah, completely. like, yeah, you could go on social media and like maybe feel good for a second because you like made a comment or you got a nice comment, but you're not going to feel as good as even just going out to dinner with a friend. Like, and it's the same layer with nature. Like, you know, if you take that out to nature with a good group of people, you're going to feel that much more juiced.
What kind of bird is that? Is that a magpie or a falcon? Or
it's not a magpie. It might.
I think it's a falcon?
No, I only caught a glimpse of it.
It's so crazy. It's like white and gray.
Yeah.
Two-tone. And it came flying up the ridge. So it's like, yeah, I'm several thousand feet above. And then all of a sudden, it's like two dudes.
Yeah. Yeah. It was probably thinking about parking in front of us. It just kept flying over.
Well, he's over there.
Yeah, he landed for a second behind that tree and then looked like he took off.
Well, thanks for bringing me up here. It's always, I feel like when people say you go up to high places, it is, you do kind of get high because even you think about the air being more rarefied and the ions and and the oxygen sometimes, you're breathing deeply and you can see far, you get a physical perspective, but also there's sort of an energetic perspective.
Yeah. It's kind of like nature's map as well. Like before we had fancy maps and apps and things that showed us where we were.
You get up high.
You had to go up high to like get a perspective on the land. So for me, it even though I have access to open up a map, it still does that. I can go up high and be like, oh yeah, that's how it actually looks. So next time when I'm there, you know, I'll have a better understanding of how to move through that terrain. And also just understanding the geology of it, the plants and where the animals might be. Like I can look around and get a better feel for where resources might be as well if I'm in it in that hunter-gatherer perspective.
What if you're looking at it like, does coming up high give you a map of your own life in a way or any perspective on your psyche?
I mean, it definitely gives me like,
bird.
Yeah. I don't know what he was. Or she.
It's a dragon.
Yeah. Small dragon.
Sorry, I was asking, you know, because I find that I feel I get a lot of perspective and I have a lot of insights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I go up high. I love getting up high.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like it definitely gives me a different perspective for sure. Sometimes I just feel like when I'm spending a lot of time down low, I get a little boxed in. And definitely a different energetic perspective as well.
Sometimes I get a little high, though, too. So, I mean, two together.
I definitely get high running at altitude, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I found when I first came out here, I was doing some long solos in the canyons. And I, like, that's kind of where the resources are. But I found, like in the wintertime, like, being down there, and it was kind of socked in. There's not a lot of light. It's kind of cold.
And then the canyons?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, you just climb out on the rim, and you can look around. You can see, you know, a lot of our predominant mountain ranges around. And it's like, yeah, it just changes everything. Changes my mood, my perspective, and makes me feel excited to like keep going on and even go back down in it and like figure it out. But, like sometimes you just have to get high.
Do you think there's a lot of people coming out that are trying to get that wilderness experience, but they're doing it before they know what they're doing, or it's like taking unnecessary risks? I imagine it's going to be happening more and more because people are really struggling.
Yeah. I mean, I'm supposed to tell you how dangerous the wilderness is, but it's really not, honestly. People die a lot more times in cities and, you know, through all kinds of situations, cars and death and murder, bad health. The wilderness is pretty safe. Like, yeah, you know, sometimes inexperienced people might come out and like maybe climb something they shouldn't or like get trapped in a flash flood. Yeah. Like get trapped and have too much water or not enough water. Those things can happen, but they're actually pretty rare. Like like just a little bit of common sense out in the land, I think actually is goes pretty far. I think it's a lot easier to get hurt and damaged in other places than out here.
Maybe you do have to, there is a level of paying attention that I think for some people, they don't do. Mm-hmm. So just like, wait a minute, I have to see where I'm walking or you know, basic things.
Yeah, absolutely.
It can be kind of stressful at first.
Yeah, but I think you kind of get, it just teaches you what to do right away.
Yeah.
Like it starts being that mentor right off the bat as soon as you make that first step.
Yeah. Well, I'm grateful to be out here.
Yeah, me too. It's good. I'm glad we came up.
And
it's actually, I got up earlier than I've been getting up this week, so it was nice to get out of bed.
I got my ass up at 6. So.
Yes.
But I saw an amazing moon.
Yeah, same.
With Mars and the dawn color light. Wow. That was incredible, actually.
Yeah,
see that this morning.
That was pretty magical. Such an interesting moon too, because it was, you could see the crescent, it was bright, but then you could see the whole moon really clearly, the dark portion.
Yeah. Well, thanks to these trees, we'll take a pause here or something and continue our hike. I'm glad we sat down next to them. I was hoping to see these when I came up. So, thank you.
Yeah, good. It's good to be surrounded. So.
Cool. Thanks, Matt, and thanks to all you for listening. And I apologize again about the sound, but you know, it was that or not do it. I thought it'd just be fun. It's nice sometimes to do site-specific podcasts on the spot. Check out his world if you ever want to do. He does some guiding at our retreats sometimes, but he also runs his own courses and primitive skill retreats, which are really rad. So check it out. This song that you're hearing in the background is Born I, and I did a collaboration, the I Can't Breathe East Forest remix. I encourage you to check out the song. He was rapping over singing bowls, and then I took that and added some beats and music, and I'm really proud of it. And he's an amazing artist, and so he's definitely one to check out. Thanks again for subscribing, for reviewing. Hope to see you at a live show, and check out the East Forest on Patreon, patreon.com/eastforest. I'll catch you next week. You guys keep walking your walk. Don't take any shit. But if you do, do it with grace. Some of us take a pill, some meditate and chill. Coping with the pain that America hates us still. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Game of Thrones, it's the King's Landing. Giving hell when the winter fell, then we swing cannons. With every moment passing and all of my distractions, feeling like the life I live is haunted by assassins. Spend a dark night under the heavens, enough to utter the question, am I alone or am I under protection? The King's Iron Throne, I alone flying home. Make them down on chrome, black palace, white castle, to the sky I roam. Silent poems whispered in a samurai's dream. Granted I seem battered by the battles I've seen. This is born our music for sages through the unusual ages. Now they never question who is the greatest. What is profit to a man who gained the world and lose his own soul? Fo-fo, when that chrome goat, then it's closed door. Afterlife, there is the reincarnation. King without a crown on some Ichabod Crane shit. Swore that I would rep it, though the Saurusites confess it. They don't really want peace, they just polarize the message. But what's the message? All life is precious. My team are represented until all eyes respect it. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Peace. George Floyd. Breonna Taylor. Philando Castile. Eric Garner. Mike Brown. Trayvon Martin. Sandra Bland. And so many others. We love you. Bless.